Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Well, welcome back to another episode of The Next Brave Thing. I am so excited about today's guest. We have Laura Duncan joining us. And welcome to the podcast, Laura. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Ella, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so I first heard of Laura many years ago, and I remember being introduced to her work on self-compassion, and it was such a new concept to me. And I, heard her on a number of podcasts. I had my students listen to her just so that they could get this kind of understanding on what self-compassion is. So today we're going to talk a little bit about self-compassion, but there was a particular podcast that I've had my clients listen to, and I've had my students listen to, and I've done the exercise she talks through. And that is a podcast. It was a podcast on getting your needs met. And what I've found is that a lot of the time when we're triggered, it usually shows up in the form of unmet need. And so you, Laura, have such a stunning way of articulating needs. But before we jump into that, I'd love for our audience to get to know you. And yeah, I would love to know a bit of your story and how you came to talking about and building this practice called the Compassion Method.
Yeah, I'd love to share. So I think this started, well, the beginning started, unfortunately, with sad news of my husband. He passed away, I think it's 15 years ago now. And so from that event, I wanted to learn how to process pain, obviously, for myself, but also I have four kids. And I couldn't control their dad dying. But after I read all the statistics of what it looks like for a child to lose a parent in early childhood development, I was like, I can affect that. And I can make changes for that, even though I can't change the fact that he passed away. And so from that, I started studying the neuroscience of grief and the neuroscience of our emotions and our pain, and ultimately learning how our brain is neuroplastic, that we can go back at any time and be able to heal our brains so that we don't have the statistical byproduct of being raised in a home that had pain or suffering. And yes, my story came from a more extreme, event of someone dying, but we all have pain in our early childhood development, and that always creates a negative consequence later on in our lives. And it can, and we look at it sometimes as like, if you have a big event, obviously it's going to be, a big problem. But I find that it doesn't matter to what extreme we have pain in our lives. If we have pain, we are going to have triggers and reactions later on in life. So all that to say, I started to process my own pain and help my kids walk through their pain, and then family members that were connected to my husband passing, and then friends. And it just kept kind of rippling from that to be able to, what is now I call the Compassion Method. And it's centered around being able to face our pain, get our needs met, be able to treat ourselves with compassion, and have a real relationship and connection with ourselves. And from that place, we get to return home. And I always thought, like, the pain, because that's what I was going through at the moment, that was the big thing. And if we could take care of the pain, then everyone's going to be okay. But what I found, pain is just the doorway to coming home to who we really are. And when you come home to who you really are, that's actually the main goal in all of this.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Yeah, I think that we go through some unfathomable things in our life sometimes, and I, sit with clients as well myself, and and we can't intellectualize our way through the pain.
No, like, I wish we could. That would have been a lot easier.
Yeah.
At least for myself personally.
Yeah. And I think that we can have this when someone's in a lot of pain, we can quickly try and spiritual bypass them, or like try and get to the positive thing. And it's really hard for us to sit in those moments with people. I'd love to for you to know, share like why you think it's so hard for us to actually be with people in these moments of suffering.
Yeah, well, because empathy is to connect with you and be with you in your suffering. I have to connect to my own suffering. And every human is adverse to pain, because my belief is we were never created for pain, but as a byproduct of, you know, events that have happened in this life, we now all are dealing with pain. But I don't believe that that was the original design. So I think there's something in all of us that's pushing pain away constantly, whether it's conscious or subconscious. We're pushing pain away because it's so uncomfortable to feel. But pain is actually a good thing. It sounds weird because everyone's like, oh no, we just want to get rid of pain. Like I also did. But if you think about it, like if this computer was a hot surface and I touched it and no pain happened and no reaction happened, I would melt my hand. But because when I touch a hot surface, pain goes, ouch, it actually causes me to be able to take care of myself and be able to walk through that pain to actually have a good outcome. That's why I always tell people when a trigger comes up, it's opportunity. It's opportunity to be with ourselves first in our pain and then to be with someone else. But if you think about it, we've been protecting ourselves our whole entire lives. So it's actually a threat to our survival to be with someone in their pain.
And I think that and this is why I'm having you on the podcast, because you have such great language to give people a roadmap through pain, because there could be fears that we're going to be stuck in self-pity if we feel the pain, whereas we're afraid that the pain will swallow us whole if we don't.
It sure feels like it in the moment.
Yeah, it really is. But you have such a beautiful way of bringing the science into how do we end the pain cycles in our life, which is beautiful. And I wonder, like I know for me, if I look through all my painful triggers in life that I've worked through, but I look at them and I think I'm acquainted with my deficiency, like what it's often connected to my weakness or something I didn't get growing up or, like finding where I think the big thing that a lot of us struggle with is feeling like not enough and feeling like not enough was done for us or fought for us. And so I'd love to us to kind of talk about we commonly known as like getting our needs met, but you have such great language of talking about it as gifts. So I'd love to hear like, what you mean by gifts that we're supposed to receive or get to receive.
So intentional or unintentional neglect happened to all of us in our early childhood development. You know, I wasn't even able to give all this to my children either. Now that I'm aware of it, I've been able to walk them through the same exact process and they have been able to receive what I wasn't able to give them. But every parent has a level of deficiency. Now we're trying to raise the next generation deficient. And so my belief is that every single human needs these 10 emotional needs, or as I like to say, gifts. And the reason why I say gifts is because I love to put the word unconditional in front of each of these needs. When we unconditionally receive these needs in our early childhood development from 0 to 12 years old, we actually receive what we were needing to receive emotionally. And what that does is it creates a full heart. When our hearts are full of love, full of our needs being met, you can go through any adversity and still be okay regardless. That's the beauty of it. It's the superpower of it, that if I have my needs met, I can go through trauma and still be okay. And so that's why I think actually our emotional needs being met, these gifts being given to us by caregivers in early childhood development, is as important, and I would even say more important, than even the traumas we experienced in early childhood development. Wow. I've had two clients come in with the exact same abuse story in childhood. One had their needs met, one did not have their needs met, and the byproduct of that was profoundly different. The person with their needs met went through the trauma, was able to stay tenderhearted, ask for help, grieve, be with themselves, allow others to be with them. the person that didn't get their needs met was more on the defensive, less wanting to feel the pain because there wouldn't be any comfort to come because they didn't experience the affection that was meant to be accompanied by a caregiver at that time. Mm. And so without that, going through the same exact adverse situation created way different end result. So I do believe that the 10 emotional gifts, the 10 needs are extremely important, whether you've experienced trauma or not.
Mm, wow, so good. Yeah. So what are these 10 needs?
Yeah, I'll go through them. And even as I'm doing this, if listeners want to just kind of like tune into yourself right now, and as I say each one of it, kind of think, did I receive this from my mom and my dad in my early childhood development? And it's okay if you don't have the answers right now, but just be thinking about it while I say it. So the first one is, did your mom and your dad, did they see you? Did you feel seen as a child? Did your mom and your dad hear you? Did you feel heard as a child? Did your mom and your dad accept you? Did you feel accepted as a child? Many people think we have to get rid of rejection. If we have acceptance, we automatically don't feel rejected. Did your mom and your dad play with you? Very important need that gets kind of down at the last because we think all the other ones are more important. But did you receive play as a child? Not just do things around you, but with you. Did your mom and your dad teach you? Not lecture. Did your mom and your dad teach you? Was it safe to make mistakes? Did your mom and your dad protect you emotionally? Physically, did you feel protected and safe? Did your mom and your dad provide for you without fear? Some people have a lot of money, but because fear is present, they don't feel provided for. Did you have provision? Did your mom and your dad show you that you're valuable? Did you know that you mattered, that you were important? Did your mom and your dad give you affection emotionally and physically? Did they hold you? Did their eyes tell you that they were holding you? And lastly, did your mom and your dad show you that you're enough, just the way you are? That what you do in life matters, but you matter more and you're enough. Those are the 10 gifts that we all needed, and we can see as adults when we didn't receive them. Mm. And you constantly feel invisible, and you're trying to get attention, you're trying to get people to see you, and you're doing bigger and better things. And I know a lot of creatives are listening, and you're trying to create and come up with that next idea and produce it through your song, through your dance, through whatever form of creativity that you like to present yourself. Are we doing it because of as an overflow of who we are, because I'm seen and I'm known, so I can show that through what I do? Or are we doing it to be seen because of a deficiency? You know, am I enough? Mm-hmm. We never feel like we're enough, mm-hmm. not because we didn't do enough, but because we don't believe who we are is enough. That one goes so deep, because when we believe that who we are isn't enough, it's not just, again, that we didn't do enough. It's who we are is not enough. Mm. And that came from a caregiver saying, you're enough just the way you are. That you know each of these gifts, because a mom and a dad both were able to give them to you throughout your childhood.
Mm. So I think as we hear that, I think it's always, there's usually the different parts of the process of unpacking this, because I think initially we think, oh, that's why I find myself stuck in this proving cycle, I'm stuck in dynamics where I constantly feel rejected because I didn't feel like I was fully accepted and could be myself growing up, you know. And so I think there's this, oh, wow, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then we get to the point of connecting all the dots of like why we show up the way that we do. But then we get to the point of like, how do we fill up this deficiency? So what's the next step in this process?
So this is where the neuroscience comes in. So it's so exciting because, like I said before, our brains are neuroplastic. It's like an open door that we can go into anytime, regardless if we received these gifts or we didn't receive these gifts. And the beautiful thing about the neuroscience is that we have two different imaginations. We have a fantasy imagination, fantasy imagination would be we had the perfect mom and dad and they were always there for us and they gave us all these gifts, but it's not based on reality. There's a second part of our brain that has a different type of imagination, and then it's called vivid imagination. Mm. And that's real people, real events, reapplied to our lack. So it's just as tangible. I know we're online, so we're not tangibly touching right now, but I see your hair, I see your eyes, I see your body language. I feel this connection as we're talking. It's real and tangible. Mm. And so it's not like I'm just imagining this random person. I'm imagining you mm-hmm. and your body language and the kindness that comes from you and the compassion, the empathy that comes from you. It's real. So if I took you in the moment that I'm experiencing right now with you and I'm able to reapply it to the five-year-old file in my brain, because the five-year-old me didn't have someone speaking to me in this way, feeling this in this way. If you took it even a step further to a person that is tangibly in your life today that gives you a hug and you feel the pressure of that hug, and you feel the heartbeat, and you feel the warmth, and you feel the tangibility, I can then give that hug to that five-year-old file in my brain. And the brain says, it happened. They did this study where they took a group of tennis players, and they put half of the group on the court playing tennis. They put the other half in a room vividly imagining playing tennis. If I imagine playing tennis, it would be fantasy because I don't really know the rules and I've only played like 3 times in my life and I'd be like, totally. Yeah, I'm gonna hit the ball. I don't even know. I don't know what the score is. I don't know what I'm doing. I know nothing. That's fantasy. But for a professional tennis player, they do that day in, day out. They know tennis vividly. So they put brain sensors on the group that was in the room vividly imagining playing tennis, and they put brain sensors on the tennis players actually playing tennis. Both sensors fired. They were playing tennis. That's how real vivid imagination is. So that same concept is firing when I imagine a real person that truly saw me. And I felt it. There's a substance to these gifts. It's not just, yes, someone saw me. It's there's a whole felt experience to it. When someone really sees you and you feel known and you feel like they see you for who you really are. There's a substance to it. When you take that substance almost like an ointment and you're able to apply it to your heart, the need is met. And the brain literally says, it happened. Because it did happen, just didn't happen at that time. Real people, real events, reapplied.
That's beautiful. That's amazing that we can kind of recreate our childhood in some ways.
Yes. Yeah. We can't change it, and nor do we want to. A lot of people, when they go back to early childhood development, they go back to fix the child. So they go back to change it. So they'll imagine taking the child out of the room where there was pain involved. But what I say is we don't want to take you out of it, because everything that happened to you happened to you. We want to infuse and bring these needs and bring this love into it. So that the real experience is reconciled with real love.
Yeah. I love this. I think as you're sharing, I'm noticing moments where I walk through, I have like a triggered journal prompts that I'll, if I'm triggered, I'll start to process like what happened, what does this remind me of? Where am I, like, what memory does it remind me of? Where do I feel like I'm lacking in myself? Or what am I hoping to get from this person on a deeper level rather than...
I love that. What great prompts. You know,
I mean, it's very guided to get you to the reframing. Because I notice, like, if I don't learn how to get my needs met in a healthy way, I'll manipulate them to get met.
Like, of course you will. That's survival. We need our needs to be met in that little part of our brain, like we need food and water. So we will.
And so, and I've noticed, because I listened to your podcast so many times on when you were talking about needs, and I did the exercise of writing, did I get that from my mom or my dad or neither? Sometimes it's like, that's a hard moment. But then there's also like, obviously compassion to our parents because they weren't given everything that they needed.
Oh, yeah, they can't give but, what they don't have, nor could we.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what was beautiful is like doing these prompts to look into like where does this stem from and what do mm-hmm. I feel like I need or I'm lacking yeah. in myself. Then it's been this beautiful kind of like divine orchestration. It's almost like because I'm listening to myself, I all of a sudden feel heard. And then yeah. it's like this divine orchestration happens and then I find myself in a moment where I have this resourcing moment like you're talking about where, yeah. wow, my boss really heard me in this moment and it yes. repairs this moment from my childhood from a teacher I didn't feel heard by or something.
Yes, exactly.
So I'd love to hear about these moments where we apply the vivid imagination to do this yeah. repair in our mm-hmm. in our painful moments.
Yeah, so I kind of look at it as like gathering a bouquet. So if we just centered on being seen, and I felt like my mom and my dad both couldn't see me. Sometimes parents see what they want to see, but you don't feel fully seen because it feels conditional. But you're longing for that unconditional feeling of being seen. So then what I usually have people do is pick like five women and five men, which in the beginning will sound like a lot. You'll be like, but nobody's seen me, so I don't have anyone for the list. But it's kind of fun. I always look at it as like a treasure hunt. In the beginning, it is a little discouraging. And you're like, even myself, I was like, I don't even know if I have that many. And I'm telling everybody else to go find five men and five women. I may not even have that. But you'll find it. They're always there. Divinely, everything was seen that we were going to be able to receive or not receive. And people have been being poured into our lives on way more of a consistent, concentrated level than we realize. But if you didn't receive it, you don't have eyes to see it. You don't know how to receive it. So love will walk right by. These gift givers, like I like to call them, will walk right by and we don't even see them. They could be right in front of us seeing us, but because it doesn't come in the package or in the form that we thought it should come in, we don't receive it. Sometimes even we want our biological mom and dad to still give us that, even as grown adults, even sometimes when parents have passed away. We have a seat for a mom and a seat for a dad, and we're like, seat's taken. We don't want to invite anyone else to come in because we're still holding out for and longing for the original design of our mom and our dad being able to see us. But that would be fantasy imagination. Because if a mom and dad never saw you, that's not vivid imagination because they didn't know how to. That's like wanting them to speak Spanish and they don't speak Spanish. Like, you can't make them speak Spanish just because you want them to speak Spanish. They can't speak Spanish. They don't have this need. So we're looking for that vivid imagination. And at first, again, it's hard. But as you start to see it, you'll see it everywhere. So much so that I see it in strangers sometimes. Mm-hmm. I remember being at Trader Joe's in a grocery store here. And I was just like three grocery carts behind this dad and his daughter. She was about 3 years old, and I was really focused on my three-year-old self at that time. I had gotten a picture out, and I had been looking at her and connecting with her, recognizing her pain, recognizing her lack, and just bonding with her. That's a very important part of this process that a lot of modalities don't talk about. It's not just mm-hmm. about going back to heal the pain and get the needs met. It's actually going back to get to know who we were as a child, because parts of ourselves have been put away because they didn't serve for connection. So it's just as important as going back for pain is to know her. Who is she? So I'm getting to know her. I'm remembering, I'm connecting, I'm remembering parts of myself that I put away because I had some trauma at 3 years old and I had to put those away to be responsible at 3 years old. My mom had to be in bed. She had placenta previa, which means that she couldn't walk around or she could lose the baby and potentially even die herself. And so she had to be in bed rest for 6 months and she couldn't get up. So here I am, 3 years old, pushing a stool up to the sink, trying to wash dishes and trying to bring bread and butter to my younger brother and trying to do all these things at 3 years old. So I had to put away carefree. I had to put away playfulness. I had to put those things away and put on responsibility and put on being a big girl. So when I looked at this dad and his daughter, she was just being adored. You know, she's just the picture of her daddy seeing her and loving her and showing her affections and hearing her. And she's chattering away and he's just looking at her like she's the most important person in the whole entire world. And he's adoring her and she's being adored. And it was almost like chemistry, you know, like tangible chemistry. And I took that moment, never talked to them. probably will never see them again in my life. But I took that moment, I put it on my heart, and I said, baby girl, that's how a daddy is meant to look at his baby. That's how a mommy is supposed to look at her baby. You're meant to be adored and cherished and infatuated with, because there was just so much connection there. And I was like, oh, because of their inability to parent me the way that I needed to parent at that time, I didn't have those things and I wasn't receiving that, but I received it from a stranger at the grocery store. So as you start to recognize like how your prompts do in your process, as you start to put the pieces together, you're like, oh, this is who she is. And this is what she wanted. And this is what she needed. And now I can tangibly give that to her.
That's so beautiful. As you're sharing that, I just feel so much tenderness and kindness, because I think a lot of people had parents, everyone was doing the best they can. And then,
of course,
you know, but I think sometimes we have resistance to authority figures in our life. And of course, so what was it that like helped you? I mean, it's almost like you're looking at moments to rewrite your view of parenting or rewrite. And some people might look at that moment with the dad and the daughter and feel sadness, like, oh, I feel envious or jealous of that. I missed out on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's usually often the big reaction is like, they were lucky and they had that and I didn't have that. So yes. I would love for you to just speak to like anyone who has, how do we change those feelings of jealousy or envy and return it into like a resourcing moment.
So all envy and jealousy comes from two different things. Lack of love. When my heart is empty, when I lack love, I'm going to want for something else to receive what I need to receive and receive instinctively. And the second is, we don't know who we are. So we don't know how valuable we are. So everything is external in the sense of they received it, I didn't. But if I knew my value, my worth, and who I was, my identity, I would be able to more freely receive. And then the last thing I would say about it that makes it difficult when we feel jealous and envious is because we don't believe that it's possible to heal. At that point in the grocery store, I had been working with my three-year-old file, my three-year-old memories, my three-year-old self, for a good several months before. I had been pouring love into, I had been priming that pump of love. So I had faith, I had hope, because love was filling up. So we no longer are jealous. There'd be no room for jealousy if we knew we could receive it, we knew we were worthy to receive it, and we knew how to receive it. And when you know that, it becomes a hopeful situation versus a lacking situation.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing is,
there's more than enough love to go around.
Yeah. And I think it's beautiful because we can even watch movies if we're not, watch movies.
People do it. Yes.
Yeah. I remember I was working with Justin Stumble, having sessions with him back when he was doing one-on-ones. And
a long time ago.
I was like, he's like, you need to watch movies where, like, to actually resource you and show you what like a dad, amazing, healthy dad is like. And I watched the TV show, This Is Us.
Oh yeah, that's a great one.
And it was like, and talk about divine orchestration, because I wasn't intentionally thinking, oh, I'm going to watch movies to try and reshape my view of the father. I wasn't like intentionally looking for it, but then this scene came on where the dad was with his daughter and she was having a moment where she felt like, I'm not skinny enough and I'm not pretty enough. And he grabbed her and he was like crying, like, you're the most beautiful thing in the world. And like, and just was speaking identity over her. And I'm like sitting on the couch, like sobbing. I'm like, this is just rewriting something like on a deeper level that feels like, because I can relate to that little girl who doesn't feel skinny enough or pretty enough. And then this moment that shows me, oh, this is what that is. And it definitely rewrote the way that I saw myself in that moment. But I didn't, I wouldn't have known to look for it if I didn't have, you know, Justin sort of give me language to look for it, you know.
Well, because you know how I said before, sometimes we don't have eyes to see it. We don't even know what we're looking for. And that's why movies are a really great way, a safe way to be able to recognize what, the tangible substance of that particular love that you were looking for, that he showed her value. He showed her she's enough. He saw her for who she really was, apart from her weight or apart from how she saw herself.
Yeah, yeah, which is so beautiful. And I think, I love how you were just describing how you were intentional with your three-year-old self. And people who are listening to my podcast have heard concepts of exploring your childhood or reparenting. Could you give some like sort of guidance on like where people can start with that?
Yeah. I usually have people start with looking at a picture of yourself when you're little, because it helps to gather so much more emotional and logical data points about who we are. And I really like to start with just the getting to know yourself first. So even sometimes in a session, you know, abuse will come up or pain will come up. And I say, you're the main event. Your pain matters. You matter more. Can we just take a moment and be with you and get to know you? Tell me about her. How do you feel about her? We're building that connection and that relationship with her, because you are going to be the advocate for your child self. And an advocate either is the solution or finds the solution on behalf of those that they're advocating for. So, but if you don't love yourself and you don't know yourself, because to know yourself is to love yourself, if you don't know yourself, your love is going to actually be conditional. I'm going to love my child self on the condition that her pain is healed and her needs are met. But when you take away and you make it unconditional, I'm going to love you if we never heal. I'm going to love you if we can never find a gift giver. I will be here and I will be with you because of who you are. Again, your pain matters, but you matter more. And I really think that's a missing piece in a lot of the reparenting processes, that we're just going back to heal, but we're not getting back to know. And as I got to know her, extraordinary little soul, extraordinary person. She taught me things. She showed me things. She reminded me. Because if you think about it, like unless we become like a little child and come back to innocence and come back to our original design, we're always kind of operating on a less than. But if we can actually be restored to who we really are, which comes back to being a child before pain has covered us up, and we can uncover who she is, we're going to fight for her. We're going to love her. We're going to go, and instead of saying, I can't find a gift giver, it's too hard, we're going to say, I will find you one. It might take me a year, but I will find you one because I care about you so much. So it becomes a love relationship of reparenting versus trying to change the story without the love and the knowing that's needed.
That's beautiful. And as you're sharing that, it feels like wholeness, because I think when I think of brokenness, it's where parts of ourself have been left behind. And as you're describing that, you're like bringing your whole self back together again.
Yes, it's so beautiful. I love it. Yes, it's so that's great. So beautiful. You know, I've seen people that are so serious and they go back to their child self, and their child self's super funny. But being funny irritated the parent and annoyed them and got them frustrated. So they took funny and they put funny away. And they go back to connect with their child self, and all of a sudden they're being silly and telling jokes and giggly. And I'm like, there you are. The beautiful thing is we never lost a single part of who we are. It only got covered up. When people go and do the eat, pray, love thing, and they go and try to find themselves in other places with other people, it's always within. Who we are and who we were created to be has always been and always will be. Nothing we've done and nothing anyone's ever done to us can change that, can take away from who we are. It's always within.
Yeah, so cool. Oh, it's so beautiful. I'd love to like dig into like a couple of the 10 gifts. So
yeah,
what
the ones
about
are standing out to you?
Well, the one that's standing out is provision, because
yes.
I love that one. Yeah, I think that like people and I, part of my journey is growing in the revelation that I'm going to be cared for, I'm going to be provided for, and especially I think there's, I meet with so many people or have friends who feel like it's all on their shoulders and, you know, this sense of full, like maybe they had to be over, like you were mentioning, like, oh, I had
at three,
I had to be over responsible. Yeah. And a lot of older kids, if they're the oldest, maybe feel like it's all on their shoulders and that provision piece. So I'd love for you to, how can we go on a journey of repairing that deficiency if we feel like we weren't provided for?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a huge one. If you are afraid of money, if you're scared of you're not going to be taken care of, it rules you. Even if you have $1 million, it rules you.
Yeah.
And it's not really about how much money you have. It's an internal thing. Just like happiness is an inside job, provision is an inside job. I just had the best compliment from my 20-year-old. My kids are all old now, but my she was on her way. I was coming back to Reading. We'd been down to Mexico. She was going to Guatemala to hike a volcano, and I was going back to Reading, and we stopped to get ice cream before we went our separate ways. And she looked at me and she goes, "Mom, thank you so much for the gift of provision. I never worry about money. I know I'll always have enough. I can go anywhere and do anything. I can give extravagantly. I never, ever worry about money." And I was like, ah, that was like such a beautiful gift to have been able to give her, for her to acknowledge and for her to be able to live that. And that's how she lives her life, because that's the gift that I gave her, that you always have enough, that your brain is resourceful. You can figure it out. There's 10 different ways we can do this. Mm. We are never lacking, even when we don't have anything. We will always have it. Mm. And so that gift of provision comes from a mommy and a daddy, whether you have money or not, sitting with you, helping you know you're always going to have everything, everything you need, and lots of wants too. You can ask and you'll receive. Mm. So it's sitting with people that believe that way and think that way. So think about a person in your life that's not afraid of money. Whether they have a lot or not, they're not afraid of money.
Mm.
They believe that they'll always have enough because their mommy and daddy provided for them, and they never were afraid. Because they always feel safe in provision. Take that feeling that they carry within them because they have that gift and apply it to that file in your brain that somewhere between 0 to 12 years old is when you first started to believe that you would not be provided for. That's when you first recognized you lacked the gift of provision. Go back and give that to her. Give her the knowing she's always going to have enough. It's a knowing. It's a tangible substance that you know that you know you're always going to have enough.
Mm.
And when you have that feeling, it doesn't matter if you have a lot or a little, you're okay. Because that person carried that and gave that to you. And now it lives inside of you.
Mm.
An inside job.
Mm. Yeah, that's so cool, because I know I've applied that in my own life. And I think the state of mind and the rest helps you feel creative and resourceful. Like, because it's like, oh, I know I'm going to be cared for. So now it's like a treasure hunt to figure out.
Yes, exactly.
Or to like, And it's also
makes
like
it so much more fun. It's an adventure instead of a problem.
Yes. Yeah. And it kind of links in with the need to be taught. So a lot of us like weren't taught how to do certain things,
handle money or what to do with it or how any of it.
Yeah. And so you can even kind of pull in that like, oh, what does it look like to be taught? Or I can actually be taught this even if I'm in my 40s. Like I can go and have someone teach me, like, and I don't have to do this by myself.
Exactly. And then for every adult, so I always say your adult self is like a website and your coding is your early childhood development. All the work we do as an adult, unless we give it to our coding, to our child self, it'll always be manual. If you want to make any change in your life automatic, infuse your coding with that. So let's say right now, just in line of the provision gift, you went and took a class to be taught how to manage your resources. Take that experience for your adult brain, for your sophisticated brain, but break bread and give it to your child self too. Teach your 10-year-old, this is how we deal with finances. This is what we do. I want you to feel safe in it. I want you to know you can use your brain. You can figure it out. When she gets it, when your coding gets it, you automatically have it as an adult. So always be infusing your coding, because you can't change a website, but we can infuse the coding.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because I think that's such a big thing with, like, when we look at a weakness in our life, and it might not be finances, whether it's even relationships, like we don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And so we listen to a podcast on how to communicate, but the hardwiring hasn't been upgraded.
If you haven't been heard, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? If you don't have a voice, that means you weren't heard. You didn't get the gift of being heard. So you can try and try and try as an adult to do all the classes and communicate. But if you don't have the gift of being heard, you never truly have a voice.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's so awesome. I hope as like people are listening to this, that they are starting to get creative ideas on how they can actually resource them. You give such great examples of, and it's so hopeful, because I think that even in self-help and psychology, and there can almost just be this like blame. And so I'm going to always come up short in life because I never had these needs met.
It's a defensive approach instead of offensive.
Yeah. Whereas you're talking, actually there's an abundance of provision, not just financial, but like provision of emotional needs, which is so beautiful.
And the first couple times you receive it, the tangibility is so real that it inspires your brain with that reward process. And this felt so good that now I can go and do it again because it's real and tangible.
Yeah. And I noticed this having been in church culture. Sometimes we want spiritual mothers and fathers, and we think if I have a spiritual mother and father that's consistent and meets all the lack that my parents couldn't give me, then I'll feel whole.
But and it's never enough. It's too hot. It's never too enough. Cold. It's too little. It's
or
too much.
We criticize them like, oh, they're not spiritual enough, or they're not, they've got bitterness in this area. Like we're kind of putting people on pedestals to try and meet that needs, or even spouses like, oh, they have to meet everything. That's takes a the common pressure off the reason. People around us.
It sure does. Because the thing is, our childhood needs, I call them capital N needs, they have to be met in childhood. We get married trying to get our childhood needs met. We get our spiritual mother, spiritual father trying to get our childhood needs met. No wonder it's not fitting. I always say it's like trying to put like a triangle in a circle hole. You know, as an adult trying to get my needs met, it never fits because it's not being appropriately applied to where the true need is. Adults don't need mommies and daddies, children do. But we're looking for mommies and daddies because we didn't get our needs met. We're really, we just need moms and dads, adult to adult.
Yeah.
A whole different dynamic, a whole different need, a whole different relationship.
Yeah. And a question, it's, I actually took this from your podcast. I think you said, what would it look like? How would we show up in the world if all our needs were met? Yeah. And I pose that question to my students, like, how would you show up in the world if your needs were met? And everyone's like, generous. Yeah.
Generous and everything. Yeah. Emotionally generous.
Yeah. So, and I love a quote that you say is, out of the abundance of me, I can hold space for you, which I know you're talking about like being in conflict or being in communication with people.
Yes.
So I'd love for you, just sort of in closing, and obviously it's a huge topic, but even the way that we're talking about our needs and the gifts that we want to receive, it's so tied to compassion. I'd love to hear your, just in closing, your definition of self-compassion.
Yeah, so self-compassion is the practice of being with myself in my pain and my joy. We don't really think about that. We think about the compassion in the sense of being with in our sadness, but it's actually being with the entirety of who we are. And the level I can be with you in it, or be with myself in the context of self-compassion, comes from how much love I receive. I can freely give back to myself until I can sit with myself and treat myself with kindness, respect, love, and most importantly, being with. And my time to be able to be with myself increases and increases as I'm able to be more connected and to know myself more. So self-compassion is directly connected to the degree that we love and know ourselves. That's how I'm going to treat myself. If I don't know myself, my compassion will probably be pity or sympathy, but it's not going to be compassion of being with, because we only want to be with those that we truly know. And the more I know myself, the more I want to be with myself. There's many times with all my knowledge of what I know, that the strongest, most powerful act that I can give to myself is literally just being with. And I say phrases like, I'll stay with you as long as you need me to be here with you. Take all the time you need. I'm sorry that you're hurting. I want to be with you. I enjoy you, even in your pain. I'm speaking to myself like it would a best friend, like a lover, like a person that you care for deeply. That's self-compassion.
That's so beautiful. It's, as you're saying that, it's so restorative of your value as a human. And I'd love to hear any sort of closing thoughts on the topic of, needs, gifts, compassion. I think as I'm hearing us process today, I'm just feeling so hopeful for people that they can actually rewrite some of the wrongs or the way that they've interpreted their life. Like, there's another way of seeing the world, and you've brought so much abundance into this conversation today. But was there anything in closing that you would share to our listeners?
Yeah, I would love to share that. Throw the clock away. Throw the measuring stick away. When, as we get into this journey, we start to measure. Are we making progress? Are we getting better? Are we more whole? Are we more healed? This is a lifetime, eternal process of getting to know yourself and being with yourself. It's not work. Everyone always says, do the work. You got to do the work. It's not work when you love yourself. This is a relationship that's going to take the rest of our lives, and that's a good thing, because that means we get to be with ourselves through all the pain, through all the joys, for the rest of our life. So don't worry about, are you making progress? How long is this going to take? When are my needs going to be met? If you trigger again and you recognize there's another lack, opportunity to receive more. Every time I trigger, I go, that's a wound. That's a lack. What do you need? But it's not, oh no, you need something else. It's, what do you need? I'm excited to bring that to you. I'm so glad that you said something. I'm so glad you had a big emotion. Thank you, anger, for telling me this. Thank you, anxiety, for telling me this. Thank you, depression, for telling me this. Now I can bring more gift givers, more love, more being with, more awareness and connection. And intimacy and attachment within myself.
Beautiful. Oh, what a relief.
I know. It's so much more relief. This is a lifetime, but it's a joy. You know, my kids turn 18. All my kids are 18 now. Am I ever going to stop being their mom? No. Would I be happy if they were all healed enough to never need me again, to never go through something with me again? That would not make my heart happy. I want them, yes, our relationship has changed now that they're over 18, but we're going to be in a relationship for the rest of their lives. And I'm so grateful for that. And it's not work to be their mom. Even if there's trials and struggles at times, it's not work. It's love to be their mom. And I get the privilege of loving them for the rest of their lives. I get the privilege of loving myself for the rest of my life.
Beautiful. So beautiful. I love this so much. Oh, Laura, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and just sharing your wisdom. And I know that your voice will just carry such healing even as people listen today. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
And thank you everyone for listening. I always consider it a privilege to speak to you as well.
Great. Well, I'm going to link all of Laura's resources in the show notes. She has a compassion, is it a conservatory of the heart?
It was called the Conservatory of the Heart, but we ended up naming it the Compassion Method School just to keep it more along those lines.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We just started our fourth year.
Wow. Oh, and you also have a podcast called Triggered and True. Yeah. And I cannot express to you guys, like, this is such a great emotional health podcast. It really will benefit you guys. So I'm going to link all of those details in the show notes. But thanks again for coming on the podcast, Laura.
Yeah. Thank you, Ella.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.